Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Here on the program, traditionally, at 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, it's Jared versus Joe, which is usually presented by Pella Windows and Doors in Nashville. But Joe has decided to take a week of vacation in the middle of the football season, which is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I think Joe's back Friday. So we may see if we do Jared versus Joe Friday. But because the Outkick boys are headed to Knoxville on Friday for a fundraiser for the hurricane victims, which I find very commendable, Chad Withrow now joins us on the program presented by Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, I want to start with the Titans. Trust me, we will get into the college football. I want to start with the Titans, though. And I want to start with a sentiment that honestly today really set me over the edge. And that was the sentiment that the Titans did the best they could this offseason, and we should all just accept that they're not any good because on paper the moves looked like they'd be good moves, but it's not working out, and who knows about the quarterback? I guess we got to give him more time and blah, blah, blah. Whereas I sit here and I'm like, you guys were parading around town like y'all were going to win this season, and right now you're not winning, and it doesn't feel like there's any hope that you're going to win. And yet I then feel like I've become the bad guy because I guess I'm not accepting the losing. What do you make of that?
I think the term on paper is for losers in general. And it's for media people, right? Like you can get away with saying, boy, on paper, I like this. Or, you know, on paper, it was a really good offseason with some good acquisitions and all that. But if you're in the NFL and you're in a front office, you're Rand Carthon, the general manager, or you're Brian Callahan, the head coach, there's nothing about your job that's on paper. It can never be a, boy, that draft pick looked great on paper. We really thought he looked good on paper. We looked at the stats, and everything looked good. And the media locally, they love that draft pick. So everybody should cut us some slack. It's not the way it works, right? It doesn't matter. You know, Nebraska hired Scott Frost, and everyone thought that was the best hire ever. And everyone thought it was a huge win for Nebraska. Scott Frost was terrible at Nebraska. It didn't work. So you don't give everyone, you don't cut them slack when it doesn't work. So I don't buy into that at all. I don't care what media thought about the free agents that were taken in they're signed in the offseason or the draft picks or anything else. It matters about how much better do you make the team. And if they don't make the team a lot better, then that is on the front office, the coaches, the owner, everyone involved with those decisions. So I think, you know, everything looked good on paper. They tried hard this offseason. Jared, that's loser talk, quite frankly. And I'm tired of this town being a loser mentality town. And I think we've gone through that for too long now with the Titans.
Yeah, you know it's bad when Vanderbilt is the one where they probably have the winner's mentality. I do think when it goes to the Titans, like, Chad, I'm trying to find meaning in the rest of the season because I think I've decided Levis isn't the guy. You know, I've come up with my compromise on Levis, which I'll get to with you in a second. But, like, you know, there's not some huge prize at quarterback, it feels like, at the end of the year if they lose all the games. I mean, it doesn't even seem like people know who the number one quarterback is in the draft this upcoming season. And yet, I don't really see them improving much this year. Maybe they win 4 games, 6 games, but what does that do for you? What does winning 8 games do for you? Like, what? Am I this wrong at this point in the year to be this resigned in the beginning of October to say, what is the meaning of this season?
No, I don't think you are. Look, in college football, I think there's always meaning. Because, you know, you have a coach or a staff that's trying to keep everyone together. You're trying to lure more recruits out of the portal in. You're trying to sell a recruiting class. You're trying to establish culture. There's always something to play for. Even if it looks awful or you've lost 2 or 3 games or you don't think you should have, there's always a reason to keep playing and there's always meaning at the end of a college football season. Maybe it's to get to 6-6, which is a huge win for some programs, just to get to a bowl game at the end of the season. So there's always meaning. I don't feel the same way about the NFL. I think there are plenty of seasons where you get halfway through it, and there's very little meaning after that other than when you win, it gives you a worse draft spot. and we're headed that direction for the Titans. The whole meaning of this season to me was, let's see if the quarterback can play. Let's see if the coach can coach. And I'm already out on the quarterback. I've seen enough of him. And as far as the coach coaching, well, it's tough to coach when you don't have a quarterback. So I think we're just going to have one big old incomplete on the first-year head coach of the Titans at the end of the season. So, look, I'm not telling people how to watch their team or what to root for. I'm not the type of person who can watch my team and root for them to lose, per se. But if you're trying to glean meaning out of this Titan season and what all of it really means, I think we're already getting our answers about the whole meaning of it, and that was that they're going to need to find a new quarterback.
Chad Withrow with us on the program. So here's my Levis compromise. I'm with you. I'm out. I don't think he's any good. I don't think he's learning. I don't think there's, you know, I get where the hope came from in the beginning, but after we've seen mistake after mistake after mistake, it is what it is. But here's the compromise. The other side of the coin is, but Jared, he's only played 13 games. He's still practically a rookie, which I don't buy, but maybe some people do. He'll learn from those mistakes. You know, that kind of stuff. It's the stuff Brian Callahan. He's a young quarterback. It takes time. Let's start right now. Clean slate. Forget about Chicago. Forget about the Jets. Forget about the pick six against the Packers that Kurt Warner made an excuse for. Forget about the interception against Miami that Kurt Warner also made an excuse for. Let's start now. And when he makes these dumb mistakes, let's treat him like a big boy quarterback. And expect him to do things like a big boy quarterback, because I'm kind of tired of the excuse making for Levis, but I also understand that sometimes in sports, especially at quarterback, excuses are at least a little valid. Where do you sit on that?
I mean, I think it's a good mentality for Will Levis to have, his clean slate, is to, right? I mean, and I'm being serious, like psychologically, if I were him, I'd say, hey, it's not been good. I've had a really dumb mistake in each game, and I got to get rid of that. So I'm a different quarterback from here on out. Boom. Snap. Do whatever you need to. Turn a light on, whatever it is. Now I'm a new quarterback. And kind of like a magic act, you go into it thinking that way, and maybe he'll play that way. But the facts are, he's already a big boy quarterback. He's 25 years old. You know that Sam Darnold is 27 years old?
Yeah, there's
talk only
about
like
it all
a
the time.
Year and 9 months that separate Sam Darnold and Will Levis, which feels like Sam Darnold's already lived a lifetime in the NFL as opposed to Will Levis. He's not a young, young quarterback. Yeah, he's young in his NFL career, but he's not a young, young quarterback. So that's fine. I've seen it. We've all seen it. He's not a particularly smart quarterback. And I don't know how that changes suddenly at 25, 26 years old, given what we've already seen from Will Levis. He wasn't a particularly smart quarterback at Kentucky, and he hasn't been in the NFL. Surprise, surprise. That has translated the same way. So I'm glad you're taking that approach, Jared, but I think it's a good one for Will Levis to take. I think if you're evaluating him, you can't do it. You've got to look at everything he's already done, and it's got to be a big part of it.
Would a win on Sunday against the Colts mean anything to you?
No. No, and now it might mean more if Anthony Richardson is healthy and playing that whole game, and you get to see a Will Levis versus Anthony Richardson shootout or something like that happens. But, no, I don't think so. I think it's both Colts and Titans are in some interesting spots. The Colts definitely need to see their top five pick more than they have, so you know they got to get that guy in there more. But I think both teams are better served starting their backup. Colts are better offensively with Joe Flacco. There's not a doubt in my mind. And there's not a doubt in my mind that Mason Rudolph will make fewer mistakes than Will Levis. And if you do that, you might give this Titans defense a chance to win some games. But I don't think this season is ultimately about wins and losses, really for either one of these organizations. So it's a tricky spot to hold a locker room together with guys that are playing well at different position groups. And they know that you're having to play someone that maybe doesn't give you the best chance to win, and you're in the middle of a miserable season. It's tough in year one for Brian Callahan to keep that thing together.
What do you make of this right tackle situation? Chad Withrow's with us here on the program. I mean, I bring it up all the time. You've heard the story. Everybody's heard the story. I've already told it once today. And yet it feels like for the last 3 years, it doesn't matter who the GM is, it doesn't matter who the coach is, it doesn't matter who the president of football operations is, or what the president of football operations does or whatever, it doesn't matter. The Titans just don't value right tackle. And so today they've called up Leroy Watson off the practice squad, and Brian Callahan says he is going to compete with Nicholas Petit-Frere at right tackle. And so they went from the offseason of saying, well, we think that we can figure it out between Duncan and Petit-Frere, and that Bill Callahan will figure it out. Then they went into training camp, and Petit-Frere wasn't ready, so they tried the other two guys out there. They were terrible. So then they just gave the job to PT. They told people PT was good enough. Then all of a sudden, he's terrible. They tried Duncan out there. He's terrible. They put Ojukwu in as the backup. He's terrible. So now they call somebody up off the practice squad who wasn't good enough to make the team 6 weeks ago, and now he might be the guy. And at some point, I'm like, to me, Chad, it's an organizational failure that they cannot get this position figured out, and that it has been as much of a problem as it has been over the last couple of years. And yet, I just don't feel like anybody over there seems to think it matters. And to me, it's almost disqualifying behavior from them that between a president of football operations, a GM, a head coach, and an offensive line guru, that they just stuck their thumb up their rear end at right tackle and are still trying to act like it's okay.
Well, it's their new wide receiver position. That was the bugaboo for years, right? Titans can't draft and develop the right wide receiver. They can't.
But at least they tried.
Well, they tried.
They're just running the same guys out there.
Well, they got A.J. Brown eventually. Now, I don't know what they're supposed to do right now. I mean, there's no one on the street they can go bring in, right? They've already failed, is my point. Like, I'm fine with them trying new guys if the other ones suck. So bringing up a guy from the practice squad, I'm okay with that move. At least we're admitting we got to try different things and see if it works a little bit better. But no, I mean, it has been a failure at that position for this organization, just like wide receiver was a failure. And then they finally drafted right with A.J. Brown, and they eventually traded the guy away, right? So maybe right tackle is the new receiver spot for the Titans. It is the cursed position in this organization on this roster. And until they go draft the perfect fit at right tackle, it's going to continue to be an issue.
More with Chad Withrow, the hot seat. Vandy, they win. UT, they lose. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company here on the program. Chad Withrow with us, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the hot seat?
Let's get to it.
Number one, your reaction to Vanderbilt's win over Alabama on Saturday.
It was amazing. I think I was texting with you during it. And, I know Vandy fans are going to find this very difficult to believe, but I was pulling for Vanderbilt hard in that game against Alabama. It was awesome to watch. I enjoyed every second of it. I'm not even going to make fun of the fact that we're 85% Alabama fans at the game, because the Vandy students were loud. I mean, it's still like, yeah, you could hear Alabama when they did something well, the fans. But I thought it sounded like, you know, there was a majority of Vanderbilt fans in the building. So students showed out in that one. Diego Pavia is an alpha of all alphas. And my only regret is that we're only going to get to see him for this 1 year. You know, I was really looking at it thinking, is there any way this guy can get an extra year of eligibility? And because of the junior college route and everything else, there's no way that he can come back for another year. But, I mean, what a win for Clark Lee. I mean, Jared, he's gone from beating Virginia Tech and us all saying, all right, he's safe, he's good, nothing's going to happen there, losing to Georgia State and saying, all right, well, now he's right back on the hot seat again. Beating Alabama, we had Barton Simmons on our show this week, and I said, you know, have they worked out the lifetime contract for you guys yet? Because it went from probably going to get fired to safe to maybe going to get fired to lifetime contract. That's what it felt like when Vandy beat Alabama and won for the first time ever in 61 tries against the top five opponent. It was an incredible scene.
Number two, what's wrong with the Vols?
Josh Heupel has a defense for the first time ever, and it's broken his brain a little bit. I think that, you know, we talked about Mason Rudolph giving the Titans defense the best chance to win. It feels like Josh Heupel's become timid because he's got such a good defense and he just wants to get out of their way. And in doing that, he's completely lost the offensive identity and also the identity of this entire program, which is attack. I mean, that's how Tennessee got relevant in college football again. They attack. They play fast. They attack you on defense. They blitz. They have tackles for loss. They have sacks. They produce turnovers on defense. This is a team that didn't produce any turnovers on defense against an Arkansas team that had turned it over a lot, and that hurt them. So the defense wasn't great on Saturday, and I thought the offense was atrocious. They still were able to run for about 5 yards per carry, but that passing game has got to get fixed. I think it's a good reminder that as, you know, as promising as Nico looks, he's a freshman who just started his sixth game in college, and it showed on Saturday night. But Josh Heupel's got to figure out that passing offense, and he's got to get back to being aggressive. I thought it was almost an arrogant offensive plan against Arkansas where it's almost like he was saying, yeah, we can run these four or five plays and beat them and get out of here with a win. And Bobby Petrino kicked his ass, and they were out-coached and out-played big time on Saturday night in Arkansas. It was no fluke. And Tennessee played terrible until I had a chance to win in the last seconds, and then Nico runs out of bounds like Joe Milton, and they lose. So they got to figure it out this week. If not, it's going to be the Josh Heupel coach resuscitation tour. He just saved Sam Pittman's job. He might save Billy Napier's job this Saturday.
Number three, do you believe Vanderbilt's win on Saturday was a one-off fluke, or do you think this is a representation of where Vanderbilt is headed in the NIL era?
I think it's a representation of where they're headed. It was no fluke at all. I mean, they physically manhandled Alabama up front. Their offensive line was very impressive. You know, they have three starters, I think, from Liberty, UTEP, and somewhere else on that offensive line. But to me, that's a good representation of going and getting the right players. Their offensive line is much better with those guys. They showed it on Saturday. Now, you know, is this a constant thing where you can do this every year? They brought in 22 transfers, a bunch of them from New Mexico State, and their biggest ones are from New Mexico State in Pavia and Stowers, and they've made the biggest impact on the team. Is that a recipe that you can do every year? You got to get the right players every year. That's tough to do. So I don't think it's an every year type thing. But is this a one-off fluke in 2024? Hell no. I think they're here to stay. They're going to be a nuisance to everyone they play. I'm shocked they're a 13.5 point underdog at Kentucky. I'm going to pick Vandy to win that game outright. And they're no gimme to anybody. They could beat anyone left on their schedule. I truly believe that about this Vanderbilt team. Can they get stuff done in the NIL era? Yes. Is this a sign that they're constantly going to be a factor like this in the NIL era? I think that's a little bit more difficult because if you're going to bring in that many transfers, you really got to get the right ones every single year, and that's tough.
Was Saturday and the lead-up to Saturday, I don't know if you've heard Paul Feinbaum, but he's just been roasting Kalen DeBoer about how much they kept overlooking Vanderbilt, talking about the Georgia game throughout last week, etc., and how Nick Saban would never do that. Was Saturday a red flag for the Kalen DeBoer era at Alabama replacing Nick Saban?
Well, it is a flag that shows that he's not Nick Saban, right? I mean, I don't know if it's a red flag, but there's your sign that, you know, hey, Bama fans, newsflash, you lost the greatest coach of all time. And Kalen DeBoer is not the greatest coach of all time. He's a very good coach. I think he's going to do very well at Alabama, but he's not Nick Saban because Nick Saban was not going to lose that game. This wouldn't have happened because he would have been all over his players all week long, and they would have come out. Even if they were sluggish to start, they would have snapped to it and probably found a way to win that game, even if it was ugly and close. So I don't think it's a red flag. I think it's a reminder to Bama fans that Kalen DeBoer is not Nick Saban, and it should be a reminder to Kalen DeBoer to change the way he approaches things week to week, because this SEC this year has got really good balance and some really good parity. I think everyone outside of Mississippi State can beat anyone else in the conference this year. I don't think Alabama's great. I don't think Georgia's great. I don't think Tennessee's great. I think those teams are very good. I don't think Texas is great. I think there are a bunch of very, very good teams, no great teams, and there's some good teams that are teams 13, 14, 15 in this conference this year, like a Vanderbilt possibly. So you got to come ready. You got to be ready to bang hats each and every week in this conference. And Kalen DeBoer learned that the hard way on Saturday.
Next one, who's the second best team in the SEC?
Second best team, I'm still going to go Alabama right now, even after the loss. The win over Georgia is huge. you know, Georgia gets some consideration here because, lo and behold, look how good Clemson looks now after they just pounded them in week one. So Georgia's under consideration. I really think it's still, it's Texas number one, pretty clearly. I think after that, it's Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, LSU, but right now Ole Miss is in that mix. I think Missouri might suck, honestly. We're going to find out more about that here very soon with them, but they just may be bad. That's the way they looked on Saturday. They were not close against A&M. They were never in that game. So we'll learn more about Missouri, but I think it's an exciting year because I really do believe that anyone can beat anyone. I will not be surprised if Florida beats Tennessee on Saturday. That's what I mean by that.
Is it bad in any way for the Titans that Derrick Henry right now leads the NFL in rushing, rushing yards per game? The Ravens have the number one offense in the NFL, and he just beat the Bengals with a 50-yard run in overtime after his 88-yard run against Buffalo.
Yeah, it's bad for the Titans. I mean, here's a Titan legend that was sort of tossed aside. That was, you know, I don't know if encouraged to go elsewhere, but wasn't a big effort made by the Titans to re-sign him, and he goes elsewhere, and he says it's because he wants to go somewhere where he can win a Super Bowl, and he goes to one of your rivals in the Ravens, and he's bawling out at his age with this much mileage. Yeah, it's bad. I don't know how that's even a question. It's awful for the Titans that they don't have Derrick Henry. He's a Titan legend. And he's now starring for your rival. So, yeah,
I think Titan fans will look at it like, hey, you know, Derek wanted to go somewhere to win the Super Bowl, and we're rebuilding, and we, you know, are better off without him, and blah, blah, blah.
I think those Titans fans are lying to themselves. I think there's a lot of fans who lie to themselves. There's a lot of media members who lie to themselves in this town, too. And I think that's what that is. No, it's not a good thing. I mean, come on. This is Sports 101. When your guy goes somewhere else, when you think that he doesn't have it anymore, or you let him go, or he leaves by choice because he says your organization can't win a title, and then he's a stud elsewhere, that's bad for you and your organization. That's bad for your team. You can try to sugarcoat it and act like you don't care all you want. Titans fans care. If we did a lie detector test, if we gave truth serum to all Titans fans and everyone who runs a blog about the Titans, and we truly got the true belief out of them, they would admit that this is not good for the Titans, that Derrick Henry's doing this.
Next one, what are your thoughts on Robert Saleh being fired by the Jets?
I'm not surprised. I mean, he's, for a minimum of 40 games, he's the losingest coach in Jets history. I know there's been some bad luck with that, with Aaron Rodgers going down last year and all that, but I'm not surprised by it at all. I also think that Aaron Rodgers knew that it was happening. I mean, I don't think he went to Woody Johnson and said, hey, fire this guy. But I think he was given a heads up about it, and he didn't stand in the way of it. So all the talk on McAfee about, you know, his family and everything else sounds great. But, you know, deep down, I believe that Aaron Rodgers passively was okay with this, even if deep down he really wanted it to happen.
Last one, are you surprised by Jaden Daniels' success early in the NFL?
Absolutely. I mean, I think he's the MVP right now of the league, not just the rookie of the year.
I mean, so he hasn't thrown for over 300 yards in a game yet, though.
Well, he's been outstanding, and there's not a lot of guys throwing for over 300 yards unless you're Joe Flacco, who threw for 375. But, no, he's been terrific. So, yes, I'm surprised. He's not the rookie quarterback I was paying a lot of attention to coming into the season. So, yeah, it's been – I think everybody's been surprised. I don't know that anyone can say they thought he was going to be this good this early and that the Commanders were going to be the best team in the NFC East.
And that's where we stand. Chad Withrow joining us. By the way, Chad, let everybody know, because I'm sure there are some people that may be on their way to Knoxville for the UT Florida game on Saturday. You guys over at Outkick are going to have a big fundraiser for the folks that are dealing with the hurricane.
Yeah, we're going to have our show, me and Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow at Yeehaw Brewery, downtown Knoxville. We're going to be raising some money for some different organizations that are giving money directly to the flood victims. I think I read where 85% of the people affected by the flood, they don't have flood insurance, so they just lose everything. So we're trying to find some organizations that are giving money directly to these people that have been affected by it, which I think is a really cool thing. Tony Vitello, we're hoping, is going to join us live. We're going to have some special guests. Clay Travis is going to join us at some point. He's actually doing his show in Asheville, North Carolina, on Friday, and then taking a helicopter to this event on Friday evening. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope a lot of Tennessee and Florida fans, if Gators are in town, will swing by and help out a great cause at Yeehaw in Knoxville, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, and I appreciate you asking me about it.
Absolutely. Chad Withrow from Outkick, presented by Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, great stuff. We'll talk soon.
All right. Talk to you later, Jared. See you.
Absolutely. Coming up next, some of you are going to make this a thing. I have the numbers as to what this thing actually may or may not be. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Do you find in scoreboard watching or talking about the standings with the team this early in the season, especially with this first division game, does that matter? Or is that
I think it matters. We put those things up. You know, we're aware of it. For us especially, you sort of take a quarterly look, you know, every four games or so on where things stand. And, you know, our focus when the week starts is very narrow. You know, we're trying to win this week. It's a week-to-week league, so what you did last week doesn't mean you're going to be able to repeat it this week, and all those things change. However, there is a 30,000-foot view that I think helps guys put it in perspective that, our record is what it is. We're 1-3, but you got a chance to quickly get back in the mix if you can win a divisional game this week. You see most of the league outside of about three teams is either 3-2 or 2-3. Or 2-2. So it's all jumbled up. You focus so much on your own team and your own process that every now and again, though, it does help to get some perspective of what happens around the league and where teams stand and where your division stands and where the AFC stands, and just to show that there's, you know, it's pretty wide open still at this point. And a lot of things can go a lot of different directions at this juncture in a season. But yeah, I think you always have an awareness of what is happening, particularly in your division and certainly in the conference.
Brian Callahan says, we still have a shot. And he's not wrong. He is not wrong. Now, how optimistic are you about the Titans being able to actually make the playoffs or do anything in the playoffs once they are to get in? That's a different discussion. But this game against the Colts, I mean, you look at the AFC playoffs, the Jets are 2-3. And you know you should have beaten the Jets. But you didn't. But the Jets are 2-3. You're 1-3. If you win on Sunday, you're 2-3. And the Jets are the first team out of the AFC playoffs. So I looked it up today at NFL.com. If the Titans win on Sunday, as of right now, according to NFL.com, the Titans have an 18% chance of making the playoffs. That's basically 1-5. Again, close enough to 20%. So right now, you've got about a 1-5 chance of making the playoffs. Not very good. If you win, it goes to 25%. Now, that's before, you know, we get into the other games that are played. For instance, on Monday night, the Jets and Buffalo play. If the Jets lose, the Jets will be 3-3. You'll be 2-3, no. They'll be 2-4, you'll be 2-3, so the Jets will be below you. I think we all know right now where it sits, and there will be some fluctuations, but where it sits right now, it does feel like the four contenders in the AFC as far as the divisions are concerned, Kansas City, Houston, Baltimore, Buffalo, and I would put them in that order. Then after that, Steelers, they're thinking about changing the quarterback. Bo Nix and the Broncos are 3-2. However they got there, I don't know. And then the Chargers are 2-2, but they don't have any receivers, and they've got injuries and whatnot. So again, Brian Callahan's right. It's wide open. If you win, your odds go to 25%. That's before any of the other games. So right now it's 1-5. You win, it's 1-4. If you lose, then it goes to 11%, which is 1-10. Let me just say this. If the Titans win on Sunday, I will still not consider them a playoff team. If the Titans win on Sunday, I will not consider the pros and cons of making the playoffs, because it's almost like I want everyone to put their hands in the air and say, I vow to not start thinking about the playoffs, regardless of what happens on Sunday. But we already had Chris Sanders on earlier today, and you know Chris, he's a rainbow sunshine guy. He's talking about chances they have to make it to the playoffs. And maybe that's just going to be their thing. Maybe that's just going to be something the Titans are going to do. So basically, if you lose, right now it's 1-5. You win, it's 1-4. You lose, it's 1-10. So if you win, you go from you don't really have a shot to if you lose, you have no shot. Now, what I do want to know is if Titan fans, what I expect is that there are going to be a lot of fans that are going to be breaking down the door if they win on Sunday saying, we still have a shot for the playoffs, Jared. If we didn't stupidly give away the Bears game and stupidly give away the Jets game, we'd be right there in the playoff mix, Jared. And there is some truth to that. But I do feel like most of us, we've seen good football, and we know the Titans aren't it. But there's got to be some meaning for the season somewhere. And winning on Sunday, if you want to be somebody that says, I just want a shot, winning on Sunday does kind of give you a little bit of a shot. 615-737-1025. One texter says, the Titans and the media slash fans do way too much comparing to other teams in the NFL. Too many reasons justifying why they stink with excuses about other teams. Let me tell you what takes the cake. And I got to tell you, Robbie Stanley is a little guilty in this too. But what took the cake for me today was Paul Kaharsky. Ian, if you could, Paul Kaharsky this morning, when I think somebody said, like, you know, how did they spend all this money and still stink so bad? And Kaharsky made every excuse in the book for the Titans.
On paper, you know, it looks good. In practice so far, in execution, it has not been as good. You know, part of that's that Calvin Ridley dropped a couple balls. Part of that, as we discussed yesterday, is that they're failing to throw the ball to Calvin Ridley with the regularity that they need to get the yardage out of Calvin Ridley that befits a guy who got $50 million guaranteed. Part of that is that Cushenberry hasn't picked up on the Bill Callahan system as quickly as you would like.
Yep.
Part of that's that Awuzie has missed time. So a part of that is that these guys that we got all excited about in training camp, you know, Jalen Harrell was going to make a contribution on the edge.
Well, who Jalen got excited
Harrell
about
is
Jalen
a seventh
Harrell?
Round pick who's doing what seventh round picks do, marinating, you know, and is a project for next year. If I would have done something differently, you know, I don't have a name in mind. I would have liked them to have made a move at edge. All right.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I thought that NPF would turn out okay. You know, but if you made a move at edge, then you have to take away a move somewhere else. If you made a move at right tackle, which would have been what, your third or fourth significant move on the offensive line, you would have had to take a move away somewhere else. I don't think you can say, well, they should have also done something at the edge and they should have also done something at right tackle. You cannot solve every problem this team had in one offseason. It's pretty impressive if you tick through the depth chart at how many, I think they have 16 new guys at their 24 main positions, adding in nickel and third wide receiver or second tight end. That's an immense amount of turnover. I think it's unfair to say, well, they should have done this and this and this also.
Is it? And I did ask Chad. I said, you know, when we say, well, on paper they made these moves in the offseason, and Chad said, on paper is loser talk. And he's right. So, I don't know. to me, that's the when it's like the idea of, man, I'm so tired of the excuse making. And then you just hear Paul rattle off for 2 minutes about, well, it's our fault that we got excited about Jalen Harrell. Who got excited about Jalen Harrell? Justin says, I am not hopeful if they win. If the Titans win and Levis ends up playing semi-clean football, I'm going to be waiting for the next game for the next ridiculous turnover. Again, we said today, clean slate. Clean slate. Will Levis, going forward, we'll judge him on what he does. But no more excuse making. No more. It's only been 13 games. No more of that. I know that's not going to happen, but hey, one can wish. 615-737-1025. The saving grace of some winning around here. Because to me, there's an expectation level now when it comes to the Predators who open the season tomorrow. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.
Roman, where were you on, was it July 1st when Barry Trotz spent $2 billion on all these players? Where were you? How did you find the news out about all these free agents?
I was here in Nashville, actually. And we were, I remember... I was kind of driving around, and then once I got home, I had all these texts, and a couple of the guys like O'Reilly, Phil, Gus, we're all texting, and we're like, oh my God, you see what just happened? So we signed like Stammer, and then 5 minutes later, we're texting again, Marchie signed, Shazy signed, and it was just, it was crazy. It was a crazy day. I've never been part of anything like that, and I don't know if I ever seen it in my time in the NHL, like a free agent day that with that many big signings, so it's pretty cool.
There you go. That was Roman Josi on Chase and Big Joe. Tomorrow, we will be live from Bridgestone Arena as the Predators kick off the season against the Dallas Stars. Barry Trotz, by the way, will join the program at 5 o'clock. So, again, we'll get back to our Tuesdays with Barry starting next Tuesday throughout the hockey season, but we figured that with the start of the season tomorrow night, Barry Trotz, 5 o'clock right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game to kick off the season with us. Let me just say this, and we'll have a lot of talk about the Predators tomorrow as they start the year. I really have one expectation for this team for the whole season, and that is for them to win. You know, I mean, I don't believe in the NHL, because the NHL is truly a socialist government. Like, it truly is. The worst teams have the best shot at getting good, because if you really want one of those high-end big boy forwards, you have to pick them. And you really have to pick them, like, in the top six. Like, it's got to be McDavid, who was the number one pick. Bedard, number one pick. Crosby, number one pick. Like, even these guys like Barkov. Wasn't Barkov, Ian, like, number two or number three?
Two.
Number two. Like, so you gotta, suck to really get the good players. And then when it comes to the salary cap, that baby is real. Even though Vegas skirts it every single year, that's a real cap. And it has, there are teams that have to trade away guys because we cannot fit somebody under the cap. So hockey, to me, the delineation between the teams, like the lines are just so razor thin during the course of the year. Dallas, who they play tomorrow, I saw ESPN.com, Greg Wyshynski, he says that he thinks Dallas is going to win the Cup. I'm not even convinced that Dallas is going to get to the second round of the playoffs. Dallas was in game 7 last year in the first round. So when it comes to hockey, I always kind of look at it differently than my expectations to go win the Cup. I don't think you can do that. And I know that's what they're doing in Edmonton, because they fired their general manager, even though they got to game 7 of the Cup final. Can't do better than that. But he still got fired. I guess you could. You could win it. But the way I look at it is, either you have a team that's capable of making it to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, or you don't. And last year, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if this was going to be a bad team, or if this was going to be a team that was going to be able to make the playoffs and probably get in there at the beginning and maybe, you know, sneak out a rat something. But I knew they weren't a second round of the playoffs caliber team. Once you make the second round of the playoffs in the NHL, you've got a shot to win the Cup. Like, once you get there, every single team, it's a bounce here, it's a bad game and goal there, it's the best Predators team they ever had, 2018, got to the second round of the playoffs. So when it comes to this year's Predators team, last year's Predators team, I didn't see as a second round of the playoffs team. They gets mixed in there with the Rangers, the Panthers, Dallas and Edmonton, Colorado, Vegas, those kind of teams. I think this year's team is. So when it comes to the season, I mean, I don't know what to make of, you know, where we are in October talking about the Cup final in June. But I mean, my expectation this year is to win. Like, that's what, not almost win. Not say, oh, this team out of this, that. No. That was last year. They lost to Vancouver. They were awful in the power play. They said, well, you know, we felt like we outplayed them, but we had a couple bad minutes here. We thought we could have won this, but we did this there. You know, they blew that game 4. My dad turned to me. We got out of the stadium. My dad looked at me and goes, how do we lose that game? I'm like, I don't even know. But that was last year. This year, to me, I'm saying like, okay, it's time to go win. It's time to go compete. And I'm not going to be upset if they get to the second round of the playoffs and they lose in 6 games and they get beat by a team that, you know, looks like it. Because everybody in the second round of the playoffs, unless it's some Scarbini team that squeaks by, every team in the second round of the playoffs can compete. So I'm ready for the season to start. I'm ready for a long season, a fun season. I think the Predators are going to be hot to begin the year. But, I mean, to me, the goal is, like, go see how far this team can go. It's time to go win. Vingan and Robbie are up next with Preds Insiders. We will see you tomorrow live from the arena right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.